For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Later today, Oklahoma City is getting a visit from Republican presidential frontrunner Donald Trump. He'll be speaking at the state fair. Neva, how important is today's event?
Well, I think it's important every time one of these presidential candidates comes to town and gives people the opportunity to see them personally, to hear what they have to say, and certainly continues to create not only national interest, but for Republicans here, it gives them an opportunity to begin to see how all of this matches up. So I think it's going to be fascinating tonight.
Oklahoma is typically a flyover state when it comes to presidential politics for the general election.
But right now,
it's pretty important to have these people come to Oklahoma, which is considered the reddest state, right?
I mean, if you think back to 2008, and you had Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama campaigning in Oklahoma because delegates were up for grabs. You had the entire Republican field campaigning in Oklahoma because votes were up for grabs. It's so disappointing then to walk into a general election season and our 7 electoral votes are just taken for granted and people walk on down the road. You know, if we could think of a way to make our distribution of our electoral votes proportional in some way, we might be able to see the same kind of attention in the general election, especially if the Electoral College is going to be really close. And that said, you know, it's interesting. You know, Trump's going to be here. He's going to draw a huge crowd. I bet he plays really well in Oklahoma. He's got, you know, the state fair is the perfect venue for this guy. He's got the substance of a fried Twinkie, but maybe a little bit longer shelf life. I think that the Republican field, there was this long-held belief that he was going to be pushed out by the establishment. That hasn't happened. I think that the establishment has lost that opportunity to do that. And Trump's going to be around for a while. And, you know, the way he plays in Oklahoma will be a factor in that.
Well, and I think when we look at this, I mean, we're 18 weeks away from the primaries in Oklahoma, so we're going to see a lot of activity on both sides. I mean, while Trump leads right now in the polls with Carson second, I think we would see Fiorina third. There's still a lot of undecided. And, you know, as we often say in primaries, it's very easy for everyone to say today who they would prefer. But to get those folks to commit and go to the polls, again, on that primary election day is a big transition. So I think a lot of the hype and a lot of the crowds that we're seeing with some of these candidates, certainly with Donald Trump, whether that sustains itself over the long haul. I mean, he's been out there 14 weeks. He is clearly a political phenomenon in terms of what he's been able to do in rallying support. But you're right. With each debate, with each month that goes along and people start paying more attention to the issues and really contrasting these candidates, I think we'll see that there'll be a lot of ebb and flow, just like we've seen the rise of Carly Fiorina.
And I think it's kind of a little bit more ebb. I mean, you think that all the ebb to the right in the Republican primary, it has become the dialogue there has become more extreme and I think abrasive than we've ever seen in modern American political history. And I think a lot of that is owed to Donald Trump being in the race. And you guys like Scott Walker, who for me is about as far on the right spectrum as you can get for an American governor. But this guy had to walk away from the race because he was pushed out, in large part because his politics were more moderate and his style was more traditional than what we see with Donald Trump.
Another Republican presidential candidate is coming to Oklahoma City. Carly Fiorina is coming to talk to energy leaders, but in a much different fashion than Trump. Fiorina's event is closed to the public. Neva, does this surprise you?
No, because she's actually the fourth Republican presidential contender to come and speak to the OIPA. So they're having kind of a series of these folks come through as opportunities present itself. And I think that's for any organization, for any association that has the interest. And certainly for the energy sector in Oklahoma, they do want to hear. They want to hear directly from them, what is your policy going to be? Answer the tough questions. And so I think it is, again, another opportunity for those folks. And we'll see the aftermath of that. And I have no doubt, given where she is in the polls today, that we will probably see her coming back through Oklahoma at some point before the primary, if not several times.
Ryan.
One of my favorite things about this is I was reading a news report, and OIPA said that this was going to be a town hall style discussion. But then later on, it says the event is closed to the public and it's invitation only. I think that's a wonderful commentary on American politics in 2015.
And we've had that. I mean, Hillary Clinton 4 years ago came in and did a private, a similar deal in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So, I mean, candidates do both. And I think what we've got to see is that that they are paying attention, and certainly that we have folks here that that they have enough interest in that they're going to make sure that they see them up front and personal.
The big question is Carly Fiorina going to find a way to blame Oklahoma earthquakes on Planned Parenthood and you know, completely absolve the independent producers
well,
in Oklahoma?
Well, and she's a classic example of someone that people are just now beginning to understand what her resume is, what her background is, and I think she clearly is resonating even with a lot of Oklahomans as we see in some of these polls right now.
Since Richard Glossop received a stay of execution last week, not a day goes by without more news on his appeal. We're getting word of new evidence from witnesses that Glossop was framed, even claims the appeals court broke state law by setting another execution date on Wednesday. Ryan, what's going on here?
You know, I think the top line of all of this is that I think it's very doubtful that Richard Glossop is executed next week. I think that the idea that that two-week period that was part of the original stay, that that becomes the new execution date and that we see him go through the execution protocols down at the penitentiary in McAllister again, that's very unlikely at this point. And we're seeing, you know, allegations every day, you know, new witnesses coming forward saying that they had shared a room with the individual that actually committed the murder, that used the baseball bat to kill the hotel owner in this case. More people have come forward. There's the missing box of evidence, and now there's these allegations that the district attorney in Oklahoma County is actually intimidating some of these folks that are coming forward by having them arrested on parole violations and bringing them in to interrogate them. You know, these are serious allegations, and I think that all of this really points to the fact that the application of the death penalty isn't as clean and as tidy as everybody wants it to make it out to be. You know, I'm sure there are things about this case that make it exceptional to most capital cases. But at the end of the day, this system is far from perfect. And so whenever you start to really dive into this with quality lawyers and an investment of time and money, I think that we would see this in a lot of these cases where, you know, things begin to unravel and fall apart.
Neva.
Well, I think as we've said before, I mean, we've got the competing ideas from both sides on this. Certainly the Attorney General continues to say that he believes that the court's actions were entirely consistent with the law. That'll have to be resolved. And Ryan is right. I think everything would point to the fact that there is not likely to be an execution next week. And all of this needs to go through a normal, a very deliberate process and come to the, you know, come to a conclusion, whether everyone agrees with what that conclusion is, just like two court trials and two jurors coming back and saying that he was, in fact, in their estimation, guilty. They saw the evidence. I certainly, all we hear are the accounts that are now in the news and all of these flurry of allegations going back and forth. I think that's why we have a judicial system that we do, and it needs to run its course, and we'll see what happens.
But how disconcerting would it have been if we had executed him last week and now all this news, and if we do find him not guilty of this crime? I mean, obviously, as we mentioned, we don't know what he's really guilty of, but if he's guilty of not guilty of this crime, we would have executed
offense,
an innocent man.
And at this point, that has not there's been no conclusion on that. So,
right.
I mean, we absolutely don't know at this point.
I think that, you know, in my mind, I'm confident that Richard Glossop is not guilty of any capital offense. He's not guilty of any offense that should put him in a position of being executed by the state of Oklahoma. And, you know, I think that if we'd gone through with what we would have gone through, it would have been one of the greatest miscarriages of justice in the modern legal system. You know, some of this evidence that comes out doesn't even necessarily have to point to guilt. It has to point to whether or not the jury felt that the death penalty was appropriate. Phil Cross at Fox 25 has just done remarkable work on this as an investigative reporter. And one of the things that he's come back with is that the medical examiner's original report that that the victim laid on the ground and died for a long time was part of what the jury considered in saying that the death penalty was appropriate. Well, now new evidence is coming back saying that he probably died within minutes. And so you've had jurors that actually said, this was part of my consideration.
And
so,
may or may not have. We don't know. And again, we're talking about two sets of juries in 1998 and in 2004. I mean, we've gone a long time through this process. And I think with all of this conversation of late, it gives some people, I think, the appearance that somehow we've had this rush to justice, and that there hasn't been this long due process. There clearly has been a process.
But how much does it call into question our judicial system if Glossop's lawyers were not good enough?
If we have juries of their peers, if we have a process, if we have representation for the one that is the accused, if we have those that are going to prosecute the case. I mean, we're talking about human beings. We're talking about all of this, and it's easy to throw all of this additional information that we now are trying to say may be fact. We don't even know that it's fact yet, all of these allegations that are being made.
Oklahoma Congressman Steve Russell wants proof that new female graduates of Ranger School didn't receive special treatment. Russell sent a letter to outgoing Army Secretary John McHugh asking for documents on the women's test scores, evaluations, injuries, pre-training, etc. Neva, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think the way it came to light, it was certainly drew a lot of raised eyebrows and questions. But as you read more into it and look at the accounts, to this point, it appears that there are a number of members of Congress that were getting these questions, whether it was from constituents or among themselves, whether or not they were hearing from people involved in kind of in the Ranger School in the process that perhaps there was special treatment. This question now has been raised of someone who, by his background, is an Army career veteran, went to Ranger School, is kind of one of them, is the one raising these issues. So it's going to get attention, and clearly I think what Congressman Russell has said is he's not going to comment further until he gets the information back from the request that he's made to the Army. But all in all, I think what we need to see is some resolution. Something's now been raised, and the questions need to be clearly looked at, and there needs to be some definitive statements from the Department of the Army.
Ryan.
This wouldn't have happened if these weren't women. I think that's bottom line, that these two outstanding female soldiers that went through this most grueling of training programs came out the other end. They have the Army itself, fellow Ranger trainees with them or qualifiers with them saying that they did things that even some of the male soldiers weren't doing. And then to be called into question like this, I think is a real insult. I think that the idea that there's some political incentive for the Army to qualify soldiers that aren't otherwise qualified for whatever reason, to say that they're trying to meet some sort of a quota, look more politically correct or whatever that is, just doesn't exist. We know that as early as January of next year, women could be placed in combat situations. And if women are going to be in combat situations, I imagine that these Rangers are probably going to be at the top of the list for that. And so the idea that we would put somebody who's not qualified, whose own life and the lives of their fellow soldiers would be at risk, seems just entirely ludicrous to me. And if I would just ask Congressman Russell to put himself in a similar position, to think if he, after qualifying as a Ranger, had his credentials questioned for whatever reason and had folks from Congress calling in to ask to see the results of his test and performance, and how demeaning that would be to him as somebody who had signed up for his country and gone through the highest level of training. And you know, just put himself in the position of those two soldiers that have received this great honor and are serving our country.
A Southeast Oklahoma Democrat is choosing to leave the state house. Hevner Representative James Lockhart announced he won't seek re-election next year. Ryan, should Democrats be concerned about losing another seat in Little Dixie?
Well, absolutely they should. And just as much as they should be worried about it, it's not an automatic. But at the end of the day, they need to be thinking long-term. And long-term, Democrats are going to find their majorities in urban areas. They're not going to be finding their majorities in the traditional rural areas of Oklahoma. And you know, my seat that I represented in Seminole County switched from me. I was rated one of the most liberal members of the Oklahoma legislature when I left, and now they elected one of the most conservative members of the Oklahoma legislature to replace me. I think that the idea that we got to keep spending, the Democrats have to keep spending money to defend these seats. If you've got a good candidate and you've got a good shot, do it. Otherwise, start thinking about the future and invest in these urban areas and look at Cindy Munson as an example of that realignment that's slowly happening in Oklahoma, but faster than most people think it would. Representative Lockhart, I wish him well, thank him for his service. And as somebody who decided to retire voluntarily after three terms myself, I can fully appreciate wanting to spend more time with your family and in your community.
On the flip side, Neva, how excited should Republicans be that they could win a seat in the election?
Well, I think we'll see these shifts, and I think we'll see, again, some surprise announcements as we get ready to come up on the next legislative session. And I think what we're seeing is that these folks, it is a taxing proposition. The idea that they come, and as he said, they don't sleep in their bed every night, that they miss the Suns' first T-ball game. I mean, and they make these sacrifices with family that after a while begin to build up and take a toll. And I think in the instance of Representative Lockhart, he's clearly represented his district well. He's in his third term, and I think all politics is local, particularly when you get out in these rural areas. So it will be a challenge and a time now for both parties to find candidates that they believe can be competitive and be out there ready to run in the next cycle.
Certainly much more of a discussion as we get closer to the election in November of 2016. Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.